This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone. Today, we will be speaking to Ratan Kumar Roy, the author of Television in Bangladesh, News and Audiences. This book examines the role of 24/7 television news channels in Bangladesh. By using a multi-sided ethnography of television news media, it showcases the socio-political undercurrents of media practices and the everydayness of TV news in Bangladesh. Roy is the coordinator of the International Research Center, CIMEC Institute of Technology, located in Dhaka, and also a visiting faculty at Jamia Millia Islamia, New Delhi. Thank you so much, Ratan Kumar Roy, for talking to us today. Tell us in a few words about yourself and how you came about interested in this project.
Thank you, Sharoni. As you said, that you know this is an anthropological work. So as a student of anthropology, I was keen to understand the allure of television media particularly and its news, which has been broadcasted, and the larger, you know, vibrant viewing culture in relation to television in Bangladesh. So as a graduate student, as a postgraduate student rather, a decade back, when I conducted a first kind of, you know, exploration among the viewers of Bangladesh, then I found that there are some interesting dynamic going on in relation to the audience and how they engage with television. So that always, you know, that always stayed in my interest. And then as a working journalist in a 24-hour news channel in Bangladesh, I also could see that in-depth necessity to engage with the viewers as well as the people who work with news making. So those were the solid motivation to working towards an anthropology of media, to say. And again, to come back to your point, that interest from where I initiated this project. In Bangladesh, in the context of Bangladesh, the understanding of doing anthropology or, you know, starting anthropology has been always very traditional, like being Bangladesh as an agro-based society, the peasant society, the rural society. So the orientation has been always like starting a society culture of rural society or maybe village society, or maybe in late 80s and 90s, we see the urbanization. But I have been thinking how to, you know, initiate an anthropology of communication or anthropology of media. And in that, I started to understand the media culture in Bangladesh. So my project began with this simple question of the interaction between the audience and news, or maybe news-making professionals. To put it a little more, to elaborate, how do you one understand media culture? When we are saying, you know, one has to understand culture, and culture being the central question of anthropology, and Since we talk in anthropology that one has to understand the interface between the individual and the structure, or maybe the how the interaction between the subject and the agency works. So on that, I think I try to understand that what is this, the process through which the media, audience, society, all these things are nested together, and how the the television news making and viewing collectively create a television media culture in Bangladesh, and how the everyday life is situated, or maybe how we can understand the everyday relation of the audience and the newsmaking professional in, with this larger structure of media where we live. So media culture, when we talk about media culture, how media culture can be understood in the contemporary time when we are claiming, and many of the media researchers are actually claiming, that media is today in the center of our life. And in the, again, in the very typical media studies, we see a very much powerful orientation to understand that media is a contested terrain, and media's discourses are actually very powerful. But I think when you approach it through the media culture, then you will try to understand that the individuals also have a very, very powerful role. Or maybe the orientation of media culture would stimulate individuals to challenge the dominant forms of media and empowers the media consumers and their practices. So from this point of view, I have played with few of the conceptual framework like media rituals, media culture, and the interface between audiences and media, in my case, the viewers of television news and the journalists. So yeah, if that answers your question, Sharuni.
Thank you so much. But as a former broadcast journalist, how was it working on a project as an anthropologist?
I would say that, this has been a question which many of the ethnographers who tried studying media has faced. But I think there was a personal engagement in both the sides. I was also a viewer, grew up in Bangladesh, and as a working journalist, I had an access to the newsroom. So I think the reflexivity worked as a crucial point in this study. When I conducted an ethnography, it is a multi-sided ethnography, so I conducted this ethnography both the sides, in the sides of where people are watching television and where I think the newsmaking things were happening. But here I want to highlight a point, which I think Elizabeth Bard, who introduced the anthropology of journalism, she has been quite often talking about, that how do we see an ethnographer and how do we see a journalist? What is the difference? To talk about that, I have realized that, there is no much difference. The only difference is maybe the television journalism. If we come to talk about television journalism, it requires briefness. There is a style of presenting things in a very capsule manner or in a packaged form. It requires a story to be narrated in a maximum duration of maybe 1 minute or 2 minutes, that include reporters' description and then the respondent's reaction. The expert would come in and the anchor would also give you that introduction. But that doesn't mean the reporters gather very limited knowledge about a fact or an event which they are every day covering. So as a working journalist, I always try to negotiate between the anthropological aspect of a holistic viewpoint and the journalistic requirements of partial, singular, as well as a concise pattern which maybe a television broadcasting media would require. And that's an anxiety, that's the tension, I think. So what I am claiming here, that both the individuals, as an ethnographer or as a journalist, when they are entering into the field, they are trying to capture everything possible around them. When they're coming back to the newsroom, when they're trying to make that news story, they have to negotiate with the policy of the news channel. They have to negotiate with many other things, the newsroom policy, the politics, the ethics, and so many other things. On the other hand, as an ethnographer, when somebody is trying to capture the things, not necessarily that immediately after going back to the newsroom at 7 p.m. news bulletin, they have to display or they have to broadcast that news. So they have that time. They have they can revisit their field. They can note down everything in their diary. They can again engage with the respondent and they can think through it. So there is a point of reflexivity which make a qualitative difference in the life of an ethnographer. I think there I would see that difference between anthropologist and a journalist. But again, how one could be benefited if they have a journalistic background in doing ethnography about journalism, I think it is always beneficial. So being a journalist, working in a television channel, I had gone through that, you know. So I had that auto-ethnographic, I would say, benefit while doing my ethnographic study here.
So the central part that you have studied is about the interrelation between audience and journalists. Today we see many discontents regarding television journalism, both at the level of public to media relation and at the level of policy and media. How do you see the status of journalism in Bangladesh?
It's a very big question, actually. What when we talk about the status of journalism in popular sense, we do see that there are various reports about journalism, that journalism in risk. The journalists, particularly in South Asia, are at risk. They have their life threats. They have the issues of, you know, getting threats, and they are getting abducted now and then. Those are the issues. I think the issues regarding journalism are coming from various points. One is certainly the state, the control, the policies, the regulation. On the other hand, it is regarding their profession itself. So in the context of South Asia, the profession of journalism is still not being considered as a profession which one could take seriously. So I would tell you, like, when people, young people, after their graduation are entering into journalism, like, their parents are maybe still asking them, okay, when are you going to start your job? So they don't consider profession journalism as a profession or as a job. So this is a very crucial point, I think. Secondly, when the way the industry, I am not sure whether we are still in a position to call that television journalism or broadcast journalism in the context of South Asia or in Bangladesh as an industry yet. But yeah, for the sake of saying, we do say it. So what I see that in the aspect of profession also, it's very critical. On the other hand, in the contemporary time, we see the issues of fake news, we see the issues of control contestation, we see the issues of journalists getting quite often getting various kinds of threat, their jobs are being taken away very often. So all these things were happening. But the question that you ask, particularly how the interface between, the journalism and the audiences are happening, that's one. The last question which you asked about the journalism as a whole. So journalism as a whole, it's quite similar across the borders in South Asia, across the countries in South Asia. We don't see much difference what is happening in regards to its policy regulation and in regards to its professionalism. And the third point, in regards to its market and sustainability. So when we talk about sustainability, this is again a very fragile area, that whether the profession of journalism is a sustainable way of making an institution. So who are the owners of the media houses where the journalism would flourish? We used to know that the journalism or media was always in the hand of the corporations. And now, post-90s, it has gone into the hand of the corporates. So the moment we go into this this field, we find a nexus between the state, market, and business. So there you can see the whole idea of journalism. And sometime we come up and say that, what about the democracy? What about journalism being the fourth pillar of democracy? What about the freedom of speech about journalism? So all these questions are also there. But things are not that straightforward, not that simple, I think. That's one. If I come back to your first question, which you have asked in the first part of this question, the interrelation between journalism, the news-making professional, and the audiences, which was my intervention or my interest area to understand the interface. So that's, again, very interesting. All these things, all these regulatory challenges, all these anxieties, all these control and contestations which we see and talk often, our audiences are quite, I think, concerned about that, which I found, you know, quite interestingly, the audiences located in the rural areas also can see and identify that maybe particular journalists are being harassed or attacked or not being allowed to speak certain things. So they do point out that, okay, there were few issues which were coming and being talked about on the television news, but certainly those were no more there. So there must be something going on behind the scene. There must be some sort of, you know, the discontent, the point of discontent that you have mentioned. I think that's also very interesting because often in sitting in front of television, they look forward that the reporter or a television journalist or a television anchor should ask a pertinent question to a policymaker or to a minister or to a person who is sitting as an authority. But they don't see that question is coming from the journalist. So then they actually feel very disenchanted. They feel disconnected. And then they feel that the journalist should have asked that. But some group of people think that, no, journalists are also under some sort of scrutiny. They are also under some sort of control. They can't do what they want to do. And looking that, taking that into consideration, we have found out that, you know, there are various external and internal forces who actually control the larger media houses, or not maybe houses, but maybe the media production. And in that, we have seen there are politico-regulatory authorities in one hand, and there are various interventionalist forces. On that interventionalist forces, there are political leaders, political parties, there are state machineries, there are various advertising agencies, commercial provider, there are financier. So there are elite groups also. And in that, how do you locate the audiences whom we can consider maybe the audiences at large, or maybe the public, or maybe the audiences who are ordinary, who cannot be located in the you know, section of elite policymaker, decision maker. So how one can see the connection or the interface between those ordinary viewers and the journalists? So when I engaged and asked the media professionals that, how do you see that the audiences can play a role in your everyday news-making practices? Some of them do say that, no, I don't think that audiences are actually very, very educated. They are actually, they have any knowledge about news-making. So they are basically dumb, quote-unquote. Their demands are very absurd. So there is no point in listening or considering what viewers think or they like or demand. But at the same time, there are by looking at this kind of symptoms, maybe one can understand that, okay, maybe there is no space of the viewers in the consideration of the news making people, that how do they make their everyday news. But when you engage more, you figure out that, you know, the viewers are coming into their consideration because they, in the back of their mind, always think that, what would audience look for to them? Like what kind of news the audiences are demanding in their everyday life? So the journalists are also part and parcel of this very society where the audiences live. And whenever they are maybe traveling in a bus or whenever they are maybe passing by to the street, they do also hear what the people talking about and what are they looking for. And those things get reflected consciously or unconsciously in their news-making practices. So quite often we see the news editor coming to the office and saying that, okay, today people are talking about this, so let's go for this particular news today. So by looking at that kind of, you know, in-depth understanding, I could maybe tell you about three major trends where the way maybe the, you know, the TV professionals acknowledge the audiences. The first trend is that, you know, TV professionals hardly acknowledge the viewers on a serious note, but maybe use them to justify the content and their style of presentation, like saying viewers would like this or viewers would, there is a demand from the viewer side. This is basically to taking for granted, grantedness kind of attitude. The second trend is which a section of professionals, news professionals, consider the viewers as ignorant about their technology, technological understanding or technicalities of news making. And the other section believe that the viewers are not very logical or sensible enough, so there is no point of thinking about the viewers at all. And the third trend, which I think consider the viewers as the central. So they think that they are the guiding force on how to go about making a report. So according to this set of people, whatever happens in the newsmaking ecology, the primary concern and agent is the audience. So in this case, actually, most of the time, the audiences work at the back of the newsmaking professionals. So in this, taking this kind of trends into consideration, I think we can claim that, you know, in the larger politico-socio ecology of newsmaking, there is a interrelation between the newsmaking professional and the audiences, because the viewers are also to some extent sympathetic towards the journalists, and the journalists are also to some extent trying to understand the need and the aspiration of the viewers. So here I would see a kind of connection happening. It's just maybe it's never a one-way road, I would say. Rather, I would say it's a it's a two-way bridge where maybe some of the restructuring or maybe or maybe some sort of care is needed in this relation, in this interrelation or the interface. I would want to answer your question in this way.
Thank you so much. Could you also share with the audience the methods that you used while conducting the ethnographic study?
Okay. So as I said, that the method was, it's a multi-sited ethnography. So it was kind of an inquisitive approach to ethnography, a television ethnography in Bangladesh. So we have the debates on ethnography within the discipline of anthropology or even in the sub-discipline of media anthropology. I think I would say that there is a lack of discussion on television ethnography in particular and media ethnography in general. But there we also have a noteworthy ethnographic initiative since 20th century across the world. But in this part of the world where I am located, like in South Asia, we don't see much of those ethnographic engagement. It was a challenging work for me, because I could not find much examples in our context that how could one do a multi-sited ethnography in the site of television or maybe media world. So to understand the media world, to understand and to and to gain a holistic viewpoint about television media practices, it was, I think, necessary for me to involve with the participants at large and their world of sounds and sights. So when I say sound and sights, the sound and sights of the everydayness where the people in relation to television are located. And those, for me, certainly it is going to be multi-sided, because the everydayness of newsroom, the everydayness of journalistic practices, the everydayness of decision-making, and the interlinked social phenomena which are happening around that. On the other hand, the location where the viewers are watching television. So on that, I have purposively took my own hometown, which is located in Nilphamari, which is a bordering town to India-Bangladesh border. And I wanted to understand that how people watch television, what do they, how do they engage with it, both in the rural and urban areas. What kind of satellite channels they watch, the nature of viewership, their preferences, what kind of contents they like, and what they actually do when they watch that. How do they actually give a social life to the, to the activities or to the news which they are receiving from the news. So, multi-sided ethnography was very influential to bringing depth and local perspectives. Also, the auto-ethnography, on the other hand, it has aided in reflecting on cultural and social practices from the vantage point of my personal experiences. So, the auto-ethnography account, which I drew for my work, was not only to write about the experiences or maybe my personal relationship to media culture in Bangladesh, but also to, humanize the research by focusing on the everyday life that lived through these complexities at both the end, at the end of the newsmaking professionals, at the same time, at the end of the viewers who watch television in rural or in urban setup. Also, my professional network as a television journalist, which I told you, had helped me to provide an access to the newsroom, and it has helped me to interact with the respondents to gain insider's perspective. I also had maintained that balance between the experiential and the experimental viewpoint, and then the viewpoint of self and the personal orientation towards newsmaking. Sometimes that can be very overwhelming. So I think it helped. The reflexivity actually helped a lot. One important point which I always pay much attention while doing ethnography, I think the entry into field is very important, where rapport building always people suffer from. These days we mostly see survey research sending out the questionnaire and asking people to fill up, but that's how I think most of the audience researches are done these days, which is, again, I would say, a very sad practice in our context, and there is no exercise of critical reflexivity. There is there is no reciprocity and respect for self-determination. We don't see the embodying those transformative methodological praxis in our qualitative research or ethnographic research. So on that, I would always say one has to go slow while doing an ethnography. The long-term conversation, the regular, very mundane chit-chat over tea, and routine visit to some of those common locations, some of those evening or afternoon gathering of people, helped me to build that trust and gain that kind of trust as a researcher, that how, or maybe as a media ethnographer, how one can do that. So I would say that a kind of enmeshed character of doing ethnography is very important here. But as a media ethnographer, I think one has to gain or have the ability to be multitasking researcher when they are at work. So we need to be ready to capture on-the-ground perspective, and we need to take multiple challenges to follow the people, to follow the metaphor, to follow their performances, to follow their life, to follow their interaction with other fellows. So, you know, without being, I think, multitasking, it is very difficult to, to become an ethnographer, particularly a media ethnographer. So I think the sites of viewings were also very crucial for me. So I had to look at the household. I had to look at the public viewing locations. I had to look at the urban areas. I had to look at the people who are sitting in the margins. Similarly, while watching, this is the watching part. On the other hand, when I went to understand the newsmaking practices, not only the newsroom as the ivory tower, but from where the local news has been produced. So going to the rural areas, understanding how the local journalists try to play with the news, how they live with the news, what kind of news they send to the head office, which is located in Dhaka, and how those news out of 20, maybe only 2 were being kept and most other 18 were maybe trashed. And maybe in another day, out of those 18, something become very crucial for the people sitting in the head office. So how those play a role in the life of the local news making professionals, those also took my attention while I was in the field. It was overall a very interesting experience to, understand those dynamics.
Can you share some examples with us while you were interacting with the people on the field?
I think one interesting point I wanted to add, because when I was in the evening in a rural area, I was sitting with the people, they were watching some Indian serial, which Indian mega serials are very popular in Bangladesh, and the people who are kind of cultural policymaker, they always have the issue. But I think I had an intention of understanding the local way of looking at television, and suddenly there were two political activists from a left party who just came in and who also joined us in that watching television. Suddenly they put a big poster of a left political party which has a image of Lenin, and that was about, I think, 100 years of Soviet revolution. So the moment they put that poster beside some of the other posters which had some Shiva or Krishna, so some religious other goddesses, so suddenly the viewers who were watching television, they shifted their attention to that poster, and they asked that, who is this god? We don't know this god. So it really took my attention. I was trying to understand that, okay, so how these people imagine when they see a big imagery? They can't imagine a political leader, maybe, because that's certainly not the same face as a Bangladeshi or as a South Asian would look like when you see Lenin or his standing photo. So I was trying to understand what is that cultural logic of people where they live, and how do they actually read a particular visual or a text. So what is the way of meaning making? And I think from there I tried to understand that how the audiences make the meaning in their everyday life. So when we claim that we can actually feed people, and media has that that quality, that hegemonic power to feed what media wants to feed people, it's very partial. It's always I think culture specific, contextual, and also very much subjective. How an individual who is decoding a particular text or visual, their own cultural logic, their own way of looking at things would also play a crucial role when they are trying to understand something, make meaning out of things.
Okay. Thank you so much. How do you think your ethnographic work on television has theoretically contributed to the knowledge production of communication research?
I think communication research itself has a very wider horizon. But as I told you, like if one has to understand media, not something hanging there, but as a part and parcel of the society, I would say that, you know, I think the theory in relation to communication research has to also locate the culture and society in relation to communication. So communication is not something which is disconnected from the larger ambit of society and culture. And being a social anthropologist, I think one has to be very particular that how the communication as a process and communication as a practice, it is related to society and culture. So I came from that theoretical vantage point of practice, social practice theory, and I tried understanding the whole practice of watching television or news making as part of a larger social practice or media practice. And there I have tried developing few categories. I think those categories have that potential to contribute in understanding communication and communication which is very much connected to our society and culture. So the first category, which is hujug, which I think is, when I'm saying hujug, for the audiences or the listener who are not located in Bangladesh or South Asia, just to make it more meaningful to them, this literally means hype, creating a mania or hype, you know. So it is an emic term. And through this emic term, which is hype or mania, one can understand the TV news practices. So the TV news channels tend to put the viewers into a hujug or in a hype by creating an urgency. The tendency which we can look at or which we can find that they always add some extra significance to some selected events or issues by creating a vibe around that issue, and as if that particular news is very crucial for today. So one has to really pay attention to this. And when they create some craze, that particular hype or craze is not being created individually. It is basically happening as a consequence of collective media participants. So this is a condition which is very evident in my finding. And I here theorize that, you know, media participants get hyper and carried away by hujug. It is and it is a very relevant and very prominent phenomena for to understand that the satellite television news culture in South Asia, because the operating of hujug actually helps to create a climate of significance when maybe the significance in the true sense is maybe nothing. But if we want to understand the satellite television news culture and communication in South Asia, one has to understand that the satellite television news succeeds through this combination of liveliness, presentness, sensation, and significance. And all these things are creating a hujug, which is my contribution to the communication research in the first hand, coming from my own ethnographic study, which I have done in Bangladesh. And in that, I have found that, you know, the audiences are also playing a crucial role, because they will keep asking now and then that, okay, this is a very significant event happened today. I saw the news. Did you watch? Did you go, check the news today? Just turn on the news and there is an accident which has happened and I saw that 5 people were spot dead. But maybe there are 20 people dying every day in some other phenomena. Until and unless that has not come to the news, one doesn't pay an attention to that. And from there, actually, I tried connecting the characteristic of hujug in the larger concept of media ritual. So we see that the media ritual as something that, it is a key mechanism to reproducing the legitimacy of media as at the center of our everyday life. So again, this is Nick Coldry who was talking about myth of mediated center. So actually, media creates the center of our everyday life. It is a prominent center of our social system. Media-related factors bolster or validate this centralization process. So the overall media practices, that practice theory I was talking about, this overall media practices actually add a powerful dimension to constitute and frame the center of our everyday life. Whatever we are seeing today, coming to the to the media, being discussed in the television talk shows, being discussed in the television news bulletin, becoming important to our life, getting a preference to our everyday discussion. And that's how particular social act, particular individuals are getting promoted into the center of our social discourse. So TV news at the end of the day, validating some social events or some individual as very significant, crucial, or pivotal. So this occurrence in the real world might not be that sufficient to be noticed. But the moment, the television is bringing into this, this is becoming important. And that's how I argued that there is a myth that persists in the media ritual, which is not only the myth of the mediated center, but also myth of happenings. So when I claim the concept myth of happenings, I argue that this myth makes us believe that an event or an incident is for real since TV has depicted that. So here again, you can see the relevance of hujuk. Like people are getting hyper in relation to TV news broadcasting and they are living with that sensation almost all the time. On the other hand, TV news professionals or the journalists are involved in a very routinized process or routinized practice or action of collecting, formatting, and representing every bit of that socioeconomic or political issue in that news bulletin. And ultimately, that is creating a persistent truth to be lived as well as believed, which in my argument is the happenings. And everyone seems to greet with an extraordinary curiosity that what is happening around, what all is happening in Bangla, khobor ki, like what is the news or what all is happening around. So I argued that the media participants in Bangladesh have internalized a pattern of living with the quasi-metaphysical charm of happening in the society. It has become so integral to their existence that they develop a feeling of belonging into a plethora of nicely packaged presentation of events as seemingly more than events, which is happening. So I see a theoretical potential in this concept of myth of happenings, where the larger practice of hujug, which I said, which is hype, sustains a somewhat mythicized version of newsworthiness or newsworthy incident, which we can call happening. So media-based social collectivities are shaped and transformed around this myth of happenings. I think in communication research, one can take it further in different contexts and try to explore and extend this idea.
Thank you so much, Ratan, for talking to New Books Network today. That was a very interesting conversation with you, and hope you have a good day ahead.
Thank you, Sharoni, for your interesting engagement.